This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Yeah, I found this morning's speakers fascinating on this stuff. I suppose, you know, this is a brave new world. There's all these brave individuals leading these essentially entrepreneurial new start organisations with a very different list of ingredients from fresh new starts, if you like, often. And in terms of their personal journey, these brave individuals that are leading these things, given the context, and given that the context is not a simple one, and also it's not a universally positive one, people are very sceptical, there's a lot of mistrust around this agenda, I want to kind of think through, well, I've been asked to think through a bit about leadership and a bit about what works by way of supporting these people and what these people need. And it's not necessarily the most obvious stuff. We at the School for Social Entrepreneurs have been going 13, 14 years now supporting individuals doing startup and scaling up social enterprises from scratch, often from the communities that they seek to serve. So what I want to do is kind of lift the lid on that a bit and then show you the kind of parallels and the read-through with a lot of the work that we're doing around groups of people leading mutuals and spin-outs and just kind of think through a little bit. It's new for us as well, so I'm not standing here knowing the answers, but it's absolutely fascinating, some of the parallels in terms of working with these people, so I'll try and share some of that with you. Okay, so the School for Social Entrepreneurs started by this chap here, Michael Young, who started endless organisations. I mean, if I invented the Open University, that would have been fine by me. I would have gone to my grave happy, but he wasn't. He continued with Which Magazines, Language Line, Consumers Association, etc., etc. Now, one of the things Michael understood was, after being a serial social entrepreneur right the way through his life, Michael died about 6 years ago, was that you can't teach entrepreneurship. It is a doing word. Now, that's a bit of a problem, considering the last organisation he invented was the School for Social Entrepreneurs. I mean, thanks. So you can't teach it. It's a doing word. But he set up the School for Social Entrepreneurs as an action-learning institution. So in other words, people come with a real-life idea, something they're absolutely passionate about. And believe you me, people who lead these initiatives, or you know, whether it be startup social enterprises, whether it be scaling up things or spinning out things, you know, they're pretty driven. And it's in their DNA why they want to do this. And it's a passion based on the quality of the public service or the intervention that they see needs done in their communities. So pretty much wholesale, every single person we have through our ranks, whether it's mutual spin-outs or whether it's startups, you know, their motivation, if you like, why they're doing it and who they are, if you speak to them in detail and kind of pick away a bit as to what they're all about, is pretty universally inspiring, passionate. They're there doing the right things for the right reasons. Now, the context is something completely different, but certainly my experience of dealing with that lot is that. So he set it up as an action learning institution where people come with real life ideas. And then the idea is to learn from practitioners. So in other words, with, for instance, the right to requesters, we bring in other right to requesters who've been there, seen it and done it, to share their journey. It's interesting, when you work with social entrepreneurs, their main blocks, in the kind of cold light of day, their main blocks are actually not hard skills, choices and strategies. It's not about, you know, X legal structure versus Y legal structure or X pension situation versus Y pension situation. These are absolutely key milestones and they're critical to the success of the whole thing. What we find with the leaders, not with the staff teams, but with the leaders, is that issues, soft skill issues, such as confidence, legitimacy, attitude, mindset, behaviour, are the key kind of blocks or facilitators to leading the whole process. Now, that's interesting because there's so much legislation around this area at the moment and because it's in such an interesting transition point and there's a lot of policy work to be done, there's a lot of people to be convinced, there's the press, there's everyone else kind of looking at it and interested. If you like, the lead of the body of work is around technical stuff. And a kind of afterthought is, well, how do we support the soft skills of these people leading these initiatives? And as I say, I don't think you support them by way of, if you like, vessel filling. So it's not a curriculum, it's not content. You don't stand in front and say, right, you lot need to know, you know, X, Y, and Z by way of hard skills choices or strategic choices. What you do is you create a theatre. So you create a cohort of people. This is crucial. You've got to have a cohort in order that these pioneers, and they are pioneers, whether we're doing a lot with local authorities and we're doing a lot with DOH stuff, the cohort's got to be there, because the problem is this is lonely stuff and there's no real well-trodden path. So you don't know if you're doing it right, wrong, indifferent, and you don't know how you're meant to behave. And actually, you might be getting a different pile of shit from a different quarter than somebody else. Now, what you need is you need an incredibly safe environment that does not leak, where you have your peers to say, I'm not coping. I don't know what's next. I don't know which of these battles to take on first. And you need that to be not a one-day conference. These things are immensely useful. I learned a hell of a lot this morning. But what you need is we all need to know each other for a period of time for this to work. So in other words, I'd need to be in a cohort with you for 6 months, and I'd need to meet you every, you know, couple of days a month type thing. The reason for that is because action learning works learning by doing. So I can look at how you're handling a particular situation, look at your character, look at your tone, your style, what battles you're picking, what ones you're letting go. And then I can see, in action learning terms, what happens as a result of your choices, your style, your approach, your attitude, your mindset, your behaviour, and vice versa, you can see with me. And that's a face-saving way of actually quite shifting leadership behaviours. So if you like, all you do is you create the theatre and you let things play out. We also bring in what we call witnesses, which are people who've been there, seen it and done it, to, in very confidential terms, talk through their motivation and where it nearly didn't happen, where the wheels came off, what was the worst night of sleeplessness, and you know where they're at now. And that stuff is gold dust. Also, we do things called action learning sets, which is, if you're interested in this area, it's kind of the geeky end of it, which is where we split the group. We usually deal in cohorts of about 15, 20, and we split them into smaller groups of 5 or 6, and they bring a presenting issue or problem. So, for instance, the chairman of their board, of their new structure, and them are on a collision course, and either he goes or I go. And your peers, your 4 or 5 peers, it's facilitated quite tightly, then ask questions to illuminate what tactic that you're going to take in that. Because as we know through our careers, it's all about people and it's all about behaviours and it's all about, you know, helping people get together and make things happen. So it's a kind of plea and also an understanding that, you know, this is a huge agenda. There's an awful lot to be done. But for God's sake, let's not ignore the people and the soft skills amongst this stuff. As was said before the break, you know, the failure rate of this stuff, this agenda's chance of getting grafted and kind of taking off, you know, we can't ignore the quality and the maturity of the support that these people get. And as I say, it's not didactic. You can't teach it. It's not a body of knowledge. It's not like dentistry. You know, you pour a whole load of knowledge into somebody's head and say, right, okay, you can go and lead a mutual, go and spin out, you know. I wish it was that simple. So just to kind of, this is something that I use with people who are new to the sector to help chunk up and help people think about where our people are operating. And this is our more traditional social entrepreneurs. In the olden days, we had private sector, public sector, and voluntary sector. Now it's all getting a bit muddy. And also, we've got the social enterprise sector, which is actually a baggy term that takes in, you know, things owned in the mutual, things owned in the common, and things owned by no one or anyone. And actually, social entrepreneurs, you know, they're primarily driven through the social mission, through the passion for what they're wanting to deliver in terms of quality of services and aptness, and get free of bureaucracy and get on with a great job of scaling what's good and what works. And of course, people come into that spectrum at any point, and actually they migrate backwards and forwards in terms of what contracts they get, what earned income they get, and how they kind of operate in that. The last one I popped up there, Stephanie, Whole School Meals in Kent, amazing. Mum saw a tender for her kids' school for school meals online. Her and another bunch of mums decided, they saw who was going for it, they saw the companies that were going for it, and which didn't have, I mean, they were doing a great job at shovelling out whatever they were shovelling out, but it was hardly inspiring in terms of what the kids were going to get to eat and you know, what was going back into the community. And they decided, as a bunch of mums, to put together a large proposal. It was for, I think it's 16 schools, to have a go, local sourcing from local farmers. They chippied over all the dinner, the people who worked there, and won the contract. Imagine that as a volunteer. You see something coming up on the net about your kid's school and you decide, oh, we're going to stick in a proposal, me and another bunch of mums. And she said, when she switched on the computer and it said that they had won the proposal, she was, you know, it left her cold. It's been a huge success. It's incredibly profitable. They are helping other groups of parents, you know, lead these initiatives elsewhere in the country. The quality of the food, the uptake of the kids, you know, the sourcing from local farmers, it's all tick 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 the whole way through. In fact, they've just made their first investment, because it's majority school owned, so all the schools own a share, a pound share in it, as do the directors, but it's a not for distributable profit director's share. So what they do is they reinvest all the profits back into the business, but also they've got surpluses. So they've just backed this community cafe, which they've given an initial slug of money to get it going. And depending on whether they achieve their social outcomes for that particular community, they're going to give them bonuses every year of money into that community and a poorer aspect of the community. So you can see, you know, you can see how this sort of stuff works. Now, it's interesting, when Stephanie came to this kind of group and bunch of people, and it's so kind of marked the reaction you get from people who come on these things, because they kind of say, I don't know what on earth I would have done without this group, my mates, you know, the peers that I'm working with. And because they're trusted, because you work with them over a period of time, they can actually benchmark and model against each other. So it's not like they're, you know, on a day coming in, meeting good people, hearing stories, but not quite sure whether you're getting the full story or whether it's going to work or whatever. So that's a little bit about the... So there's just some of the ones on the right to request thing that we did. Interestingly, we scale through franchising, and quite a lot of these other models are looking at franchising as a way to keep localism, keep anti-bureaucracy, but economies of scale, and, you know, make things work. And we've scaled through social franchising. And interestingly, I've just come back from Australia and New Zealand, where we've got schools, and the public debate around this, you know, mutualism, spin-outs, localism, et cetera, is interesting to realise that UK are world leaders on this stuff, both in terms of policy and practice. And the rest of the world is interested and watching, and also cutting and pasting all our policy stuff. What support is needed now? Well, I would say obviously the startup and the spin-out agenda, social franchising agenda. We've got a huge environmental kind of agenda going as well, and also trading for sustainability, because we've just got to get a bit real about things like social enterprise. I was speaking just in the break to a colleague who we were speaking about NDCs, New Deal for Communities, and the idea of these now, the New Deal for Communities money's kind of gone, and these are all meant to be operating as social enterprises led by social entrepreneurs. Well, I'm sorry, if I was opening a business, I wouldn't choose to open it in one of the 50 most deprived neighbourhoods in the UK. And we've got to get a bit real about social enterprise and markets, and where there is no markets because of poverty. And we've got to be a bit kind of real about the financial robustness of the arguments. And there's no reason we can't, and there's no reason we can't think around all that stuff, but we've just got to be real about it. And obviously there's, I suppose, for me, it's a tension around this whole big society agenda, but it's just such a huge opportunity to really do some remarkable kind of pioneering, innovative stuff that really makes a huge difference to users' lives in whatever department or sector, local authority, care, health, whatever. But I think unless we give reassurances and give some elements of kind of boundaries and trust to the equation, we're going to be stymied in this, you know, very exciting agenda, because it's too difficult to, it's just not practical to take people with you in the agenda. So I think, clearer language and language that gives people the reassurances and that creates the, if you like, trust that people are seeking, is important. And it's important to look to a fascinating survey, British Social Attitudes Survey, looking at British public trust and confidence in institutions. And it is interesting to look at, for instance, public trust and confidence in social enterprise-type outfits, which is very, very high, and in things like, you know, politicians as a group or financial services as a group. And we've got to get a bit real about who's importing what model. And what's important here is that we've got to be a bit real about holding on what's important, and giving people reassurances if we're going to allow this agenda to flourish and fly, really. So I think there's interesting debates to be had there. I'll leave it there. Thanks.